Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Scott Massioni. Today we're speaking with Don Anderson, the Assistant Director for Analysis at Air Mobility Command. Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm doing great. Pleasure to be here today.
Great. Well, today we'll be discussing Air Mobility Command's use of big data to save money and meet mission goals more effectively. Don's held several positions in the Air Force, including serving as a strategic airlift director and a C-130 pilot. Don, there's a lot of different things that Air Mobility Command does to collect data, and I'm sure you get a ton of data coming in from these airplanes and also from the supplies that you're moving around and fuel. Can you just kind of give us an idea of how Air Mobility Command is making use of big data and big data analytics here in 2016?
Yes. Air Mobility Command uses data analytics for a variety of functions. A few of the functions right now include fuel efficiency, aviation safety, pilot fatigue studies, network optimization, cargo delivery metrics, cargo demand forecasting, aircraft aging studies, aircraft and cargo delay studies, etc. So the bottom line is we track our airplanes, we track our people, and we track our cargo. What's new in the field of big data as far as immobility is concerned is, for the first time, we're able to collect data from multiple data sources and bring it all together to get a holistic view of our operations.
And you have all these programs that you kind of you brought up. Can you go into a little bit of detail on some of them and how, you know, operationally, or someone that isn't familiar with all the fancy buzzwords that we have with these things, what's it like for the person on the ground or the person actually seeing this data, and what does it accomplish?
Okay, I'll give you one example, and that's in the field of fuel efficiency. Air Mobility Command currently consumes about $3.5 billion worth of fuel annually. So if we could get, say, a 1% increase in fuel efficiency, I mean, that's about $35 million a year right off the top. So what we do is we have a lot of good aircraft data, and we also have a lot of data that is brought directly in from the air crews themselves. And we have arranged this data in such a manner that we can run a lot of equations on the data and determine which missions are fuel efficient and which missions are not fuel efficient. And we can normalize this based on the type of aircraft, how long the flight was, how much cargo was on board, how much fuel was either unloaded or offloaded during flight, and a variety of other factors to include locations, et cetera, et cetera. So with that, when we notice, say, a change in fuel efficiency somewhere, you know, kind of like a decline in fuel efficiency, for example, in the C-17s, we can take this data and we can pull it apart in a variety of different ways, and we can do it rapidly. And then we can identify the cause of the inefficiency and correct it, or in some cases, the cause of the increased efficiency, and spread that good news or that good practice across the rest of Air Mobility Command.
And you actually kind of calculated how this might, in a really statistically hypothetical way, be saving people's lives, the way that you save money on fuel or decide through a matrix how people will be, where they'll be refueling and if they need to refuel. Do you mind telling us about that?
Okay, so this is a pretty interesting project, but back in 2011, the Secretary of the Air Force directed that Air Mobility Command and the Air Force in general improve fuel efficiency by 10%, and that is baselined against the year 2011. So it was around that time frame that we started organizing the data in a way that we could look at it from a variety of different angles. We did invest pretty well in a lot of fuel efficiency initiatives, some of them you know, going after the optimal flight altitude to conserve fuel, some of them flying the optimal airspeed, removing extra equipment off of the aircraft that's not needed. And there was a whole host of these projects to improve our fuel efficiency. But we noticed that from fiscal year 12 to fiscal year 13, the fuel efficiency on the C-17s actually declined. And that had us stumped, because after investing millions of dollars, we would have expected an increased fuel efficiency. And this is what's really good about using the big data in this fashion. Rather than having the data conform to what we thought was going on, we actually went in and investigated where these fuel inefficiencies were occurring. And we noticed that in some Middle Eastern regions, the C-17s were taking off with about 40 to 50,000 pounds of extra fuel on board. And that way, when they landed in Afghanistan, they didn't have to spend time on the ground refueling the aircraft. So in essence, they were carrying that extra weight to reduce their ground times in Afghanistan. Well, carrying 40,000 pounds of extra fuel is going to cause you to be very inefficient. But what happened was, when we looked at it deeper and deeper, we found out that in the long run, this actually saved Air Mobility Command money and may have saved the Army up to 25 lives. So let me explain to you how this worked. If an aircraft took off, say, from Al Udeid in Qatar and landed in Kabul, Afghanistan, and had to upload 40,000 pounds of fuel, first of all, that could take, you know, 30 minutes or so of extra ground time. But also, that 40,000 pounds of fuel would have had to come into Karachi, Pakistan on a tanker, transload over to a truck, drive up through Pakistan, go through the Khyber Pass, and then back down into Kabul, which causes the price of that fuel to be about $10 a gallon more than if they just unloaded extra fuel in Qatar. Because of that, we did this process of carrying extra fuel into Afghanistan nearly 6,000 times. So on 6,000 flights, we had the C-17s carrying 40 to 50,000 pounds of extra fuel. When you multiply all that out, what happened was we removed about 597 convoys, fuel convoys, off the road. And if you look at the average casualty factors of what happens to convoys, we calculate that we may have saved up to 25 lives, not to mention the tens of millions of dollars that we saved not having to put those convoys on the road.
Right. And those convoys, they go through some really rough terrain, right? I mean, what's it kind of like that they're driving through?
Well, if you could see some of the pictures, and you probably have seen some of the pictures on the news, but going through the Khyber Pass, it's very mountainous. The roads are very rugged, not to mention the fact that some of the folks in the area don't like those trucks coming through, and they become targets. So not only is it a physical obstacle, there's also the insurgent obstacle that causes the convoys to become very expensive because of the increased security and then also of the loss of the actual convoys themselves.
Now, when these pilots were landing in deciding not to refuel in Afghanistan, was that because of safety or was it just a time thing, or what was the reason that they were doing that in the first place?
Well, it's both safety and time. The less time you spend on the ground in Afghanistan, the safer you're going to be. And it also allows more aircraft to land at, say, Kabul or Bagram, because if you're on the ground for, say, 30 minutes less, that's another aircraft that can come in right after you. So it speeds up the flow of cargo. It reduces your exposure to enemy fire while you're on the ground at the expense of declining fuel efficiencies. But when we investigated this further, like I said earlier, it was such a good thing to do that we actually made it a common practice and spread that information to all the pilots that were flying into Afghanistan.
I'm sure that they really appreciate you looking out for their safety as well. We're listening to Don Anderson. He's the Assistant Director of Analysis for Air Mobility Command. And I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions. Hi, you're listening to Pentagon Solutions. I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni. My guest today is Don Anderson, the Assistant Director of Analysis for Air Mobility Command. Don, you were just telling us how you use a lot of data to figure out solutions for Air Mobility Command. And a lot of this data has to do with, world economy and supply chains and these really complex different world events. Can you explain to us how you get some of these data sets? Are they all sensors? Are you getting them, some of them manually? And how do you obtain these?
We're still in the beginning phases of bringing all of this data together. But there are a lot of sources that we're using primarily. We have what's called the Global Decision Support System, or GDSS. That's our command and control system where flight schedules are built and flight schedules are tracked and executed. That pretty much is kind of the overview of where our aircraft are going. We have a similar system that tracks where all the cargo is going and how old that cargo is. So, for example, if somebody requisitions something from, say, the United States that needs to go to Bagram, we know when that requisition occurred. We know where the cargo is sourced from, say, Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, one of the big warehouses. We can follow that cargo as it gets driven over to an East Coast port, such as Dover Air Force Base. And then from there, it gets on the aircraft, and we can follow it all the way through to the delivery at the final airport. And finally, using RFID technology, we can track that right to the foxhole, essentially, given the fact that there's RFID readers out there. We also have some even larger data that we're still grappling with, and this is the black box data off the aircraft. This data takes about 600 samples 8 times a second. So you can imagine over, say, a 12-hour mission, how big that file and how complex that file will be. And then you multiply that by, say, 400 missions a day, and we're talking a massive amount of data. So currently, we can take these missions one at a time and just really look at the data deeply. In the future, we're hoping we can take all of these missions all of the time and fuse that together with, say, the cargo data to get a true picture of what the network optimization enterprise looks like.
And that sounds like a really big job, especially with the amount of data that you just talked about. Can you give us an idea of what your team is like, how many people you have, and how often you get this data, how quickly it kind of gets out?
Well, so my team here at Air Mobility Command is 27 operations research analysts. We are embedded with the United States Transportation Command Transportation Engineering Agency, which has another 130 analysts. So altogether, we're about 157 ops research engineers all put together in one place at Scott Air Force Base. And we, on my part of it, analyzes the air distribution part, but the whole organization also manages and analyzes sea lift and surface transportation, such as trucks.
So when change kind of happens, you know, you figure out something, you say, you know, these airplanes are not living up to their full potential due to whatever reason. Where does the actual change come from? Does it come from you going to your superior and saying, look, this is there's something not right? Or does it come more from a directive? You know, Ash Carter will sign a directive that'll come down and you'll say, okay, we need to fit things within this parameter.
So it's a little bit of both. The fuel efficiency that we were talking about was directed by the Secretary of the Air Force, and that was a top-down kind of a decision. But because of that, and because of the really well-done job of arranging data by some of the folks here at Air Mobility Command, we discovered this carrying of the extra fuel into Afghanistan, and that became a bottom-up initiative. Once we showed our leadership that, yes, our fuel efficiency has declined, but on the other hand, it's a very good thing because this is why it's happening. So you do get top-down and you also get bottom-up change that's occurring here.
Now, speaking of fuel, to go back to another real-world experience, because I think these are really fun kind of things that you do, you are also tracking the way that airplanes taxi, and there's a correlation between that and fuel efficiency. Is that right?
Right. So this is just in the beginning stages, but we were investigating something else. There was a C-5 that basically had to land at Bangor, Maine, rather than all the way down at Dover Air Force Base because he was running low on fuel. Not a big deal because he had hit some extra headwinds, et cetera, et cetera. But we took what we call the black box data, and we put it into a visualization tool, and we were trying to figure out, you know, how the engines were running, and we were tracking the aircraft as it was flying across the Atlantic, and we noticed a few minor things that, you know, we investigated. But at the end of the mission, the aircraft landed. It was very light. There was no cargo on board because it was going back home. Only had a few passengers. Yet the aircraft was taxiing on all four engines. Having flown about 3,000 hours in the Air Force, my experience, when you're completely light and you've got all your engines running, you may have to be riding the brakes so you don't taxi too fast. So it makes sense that under certain conditions for the pilot to shut down one or maybe two of their engines to save fuel. Now, this may not sound like it's going to save a lot of fuel, but if we can get even 0.1%, that's over $3 million a year in fuel savings alone, not to mention the fact we'll be saving brake life and maybe engine life on top of that. So once again, we were not looking for taxiing patterns, but we came across it while we were investigating something else.
So how do you get that fresh look on data sets when you're collecting all this data, you're not exactly sure what to do with it? What's the best way to kind of go about that?
So let me give you another example of something that we're working on, and this is still in its infancy. We, with this black box data, we have what's called trigger events. So we can take and we set parameters on the aircraft. For example, if the aircraft is below 500 feet, in other words, it's on its landing approach, and the aircraft exceeds 10 degrees of bank for more than 5 seconds, say, you'd get what's called a trigger event, and we get one line of data. Or if that same aircraft is below 300 feet and they decide to move the landing gear, that would be a trigger event. In other words, something that's abnormal during the landing phase, we get this trigger event. Also, every aircraft passing through 500 feet gives us one data ping. So as the aircraft are passing through 500 feet, we know how many times that happens, and then we know how many times an aircraft has exceeded one of these preset parameters that we built. And the ratio of those two we call the unstable approach percentage. And we were looking at that, and we're trying to look for trends, and you know, there are some trends there. But we have another data set where we look at the sleep cycles of the pilots. So it's pretty tough when you take off out of Charleston, South Carolina, and you fly to Europe, you spend the night, you fly down to Afghanistan, and then you spend the night over in Kuwait, and then you fly back to Europe, spend the night, and then you fly back to Charleston. By the time you get home, your body cycle and your internal clock is very out of whack. So we have a program that will track that on our air crews, and we try not to schedule these air crews to be landing the aircraft when they're in what they should be, deep sleep. So we will adjust schedules accordingly. But we wanted to validate that model. And we thought a very good way to validate the model would be to look at the unstable approaches. So we took two completely separate programs, one that looks at the sleep cycles of the air crew, and the other that looks at these trigger events that gives us an unstable approach percentage, and we put those two fields, those two data sets together, and we get some very interesting results as far as validating the model of the sleep cycle on the air crew.
And how do you test the sleep cycle? Do you have a sensing teddy bear that they hug, or how does that work?
Right now, it's a theoretical program that will adjust for time change and sleep and crew makeup and the amount of daylight that they're seeing, et cetera, et cetera. But there is we're moving forward, hopefully, towards putting some sort of a sleep monitor on these air crew to see exactly how well they're sleeping and see if we can further correlate or adjust the model so we're very confident that the model's given us accurate results. What we don't want to do is take action on something that is not correct or accurate. So at this point in time, for this project, we're still in the exploratory phase.
Is that when they're just sleeping on the aircraft, or is this sleeping at home as well?
Oh, this is sleeping at home as well. So when an air crew, say, lands at Ramstein, Germany, they'll be put into crew rest, and then, say, 16 or 20 hours later, they'll be alerted for the next mission. And so we'll know when they're supposed to be asleep. Whether they're actually sleeping or not, we don't know, and that would be the emphasis for putting on some sort of a sleep monitor.
Right. And then I guess there are commercial applications for those. You know, they have things like Jawbone and Fitbit that follow those, but you still have, I guess, some barriers when it comes to buying commercial when that happens, or how does that work?
Well, we're going to work closely with our medical community because it's kind of out of our swim lane a little bit here in Air Mobility Command, but our medical community can guide us through this, and together we'll give them the airplane knowledge, and they'll give us the medical knowledge, and together as a team, I think we'll get some good test results in about a year or so.
Right, yeah, I'm sure you will. Well, we're listening to Don Anderson. He's the Assistant Director of Analysis at Air Mobility Command. I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni, and you're listening to Pentagon Solutions. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions. I'm your host, Scott Massioni. We're here with the Assistant Director of Analytics for Air Mobility Command, Don Anderson. Don, what's the future of Air Mobility Command looking like? What are you looking into? What is the government doing to help you? And how are you helping the government? And how can industry help you?
So one of the important aspects of what we're working on today is we're trying to blend together financial data and cost data specifically with operational data. An example of that would be, okay, if we were to, say, move, say, 16 aircraft from active duty into the Guard, We want to know what that does to our day-to-day capability to support the warfighters, but we also want to know what that does to the bottom line of the operation. Does it save money, and does it cost money? And if so, how does it change our capability to do our day-to-day operations? This costing is a very dynamic model because it's different costs for the different commands that we're looking at. Air Mobility Command's different than the Air National Guard. It's different than the Reserve Command. And it's also dynamic. If you fly a lot of hours on the aircraft, you get a declining cost per flight hour, et cetera, et cetera. And then you combine that with how many hours do we need to fly to support, say, CENTCOM, the operations in Afghanistan or over in the Middle East. So this blending of all of the different factors is where the future is going to be. You add that to our safety program, you add that to the black box data, you add that to the cargo data, and eventually we'll have everything tied together in a way where we could do true network optimization that takes into account our financials and our airlift capacity and how much support we need to provide to, say, PACAF or to CENTCOM.
You know, right now you're saying some of the other kind of air agencies that are out there. Do you do any kind of interagency work or shared data or best practices with anyone right now?
So one of the important ones that we need to work with would be the Army. If you're talking about moving things around inside of Afghanistan, you can't ignore what the Army can do because they have a lot of heavy lift helicopters. And if we operate completely independent of the Army, we would be providing redundancies and possibly hurting our overall capability. So one of the things that we need to get our arms around is how do we get Army data blended in with the Air Force data? And we've had some pretty good successes because everybody wants to make this work, do it the most efficiently and most effective way possible. So, yes, interagency is extremely important. And also with us being located here at Transportation Command, we do have to work with the Navy, with the Sealift, and we have to work with the Army with their surface transportation also.
Right. Now, with all this data that you collect, you were saying earlier how just one black box is a ton of data. Where do you store this data? Do you have manage your own data centers, or are they kind of off-site, contracted out?
As far as where the data is stored, I'm more of a consumer of the data. I know how to get at it. But the storage right now, there's not an overarching storage facility per se. It's still a lot of data sets that are coming together. So what I foresee is over the next couple of years, as we start blending these data sets together, the natural follow-on is going to be to have some sort of a better way to store it, whether it's up in the cloud or at some sort of a central location.
And so if the you said that you're pretty close to commercial, but what do you see in the future that could be helping Air Mobility Command? What about things that are kind of like in the DARPA phase of big data consolidation and analytics?
Well, right now we're still limited by these large files. There's ways I think that we can handle these files much more efficiently. If I was to take, say, the black box off of 16 aircraft, it would exceed the capability of every computer I'm sitting at. So there is a future coming where we will be able to handle these large data sets like they're nothing. But right now, I'm looking at my desktop computer and it's not even close to capable.
Now, I just have one final question. You're a former C-130 pilot. How have things changed due to big data in Air Mobility Command?
Right now, we can load the aircraft up much more efficiently. We can consolidate cargo much more efficiently, and we can do more with the limited resources that we have.
Well, Don, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I've really enjoyed hearing about all the big data work you do. Don is the Assistant Director of Analysis for Air Mobility Command. Don, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure speaking with you today, Scott.
And I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni. If you go to our website, federalnewsradio.com, you can see where to sign up for an online chat with Don Anderson. That'll be happening on the 21st of January at 10:30 a.m. You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions as part of federalnewsradio.com and 1500 a.m.